joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. So I don't like to say good morning because people listen to Progressive Radio Network at all times of day. And so who knows when you're tuning in, but I know many of you tune in live because we have lots of people who actually email us or visit naturalnurse.com and let us know what's going on with them, what they'd like to hear. And of course, many people go to naturalnurse.com and then calendar, because if you do that, you see all the classes that we're doing. And there's such an amazing array of classes that are available, both on ground, which means in person, walking around, and of course, not so much of those these days. In fact, they're all canceled. But we have lots and lots of online classes like we always have. We have one coming up that is part of the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Series. And this one will talk a little bit scientifically about botany. So if you're really interested in herbal medicine, you do want to understand plant parts, because every medicinal component made from a plant is made from a different plant part. And what we find is there are kind of families of plants that often have very specific active constituents. So if you learn, for instance, about echinacea, which is in the Compositae family, it's like a daisy, by the way, very, very useful as an immune support. It actually allows our immune system to recognize and engulf any kind of invading microbes more effectively. Good thing to have around the house. If you don't have an echinacea present and right in your yard, there might be a similar flower. There are times when it may be something you can also use. So it's useful to understand plant families. So that class is coming up, and you can take just that class, or you can always sign up for the full series, the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Series, which is all online. And we do that individually or as a group class. And we're in the midst of the group class. We do that once a year. And that is the most cost-effective way to get a Natural Nurse Herbal Certificate for completing the course. It involves doing all four classes, which, although you may have missed one, you can take on the archives. I send you a link and catch you up. And there is a lot of homework involved in terms of reading and study and learning how to appropriately use natural and herbal medicine for yourself and your family. And of course, if you're thinking of incorporating this into your professional life, that's another place to go, because you complete your natural nurse herbal certification, and then we can move forward to move you towards an RH. An RH is a registered herbalist, and people can become registered herbalists. That's a more intense course of study, but everything you do as part of your regular routine, like if you're home reading books now and watching videos and watching the many, many classes we have available online, you just document those, and those all go towards the 1,600-hour completion of study, as well as 400 hours of case studies where you actually work with individuals and report the outcomes. So that's more if you're looking for an RH, that's a registered herbalist. But to just do home and family or self-care, the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course is an excellent place to start. So we invite you to go to naturalnurse.com and look on calendar, and you can join in on any of the many, many classes we have available. We're also doing quite a bit, because I'm a member of the American Cannabis Nurses Association. So we are working with individuals as well as groups who are working with either CBD oil or full THC, which would be medicinal marijuana, which is now legal in so many areas of the country and very appropriate for use with both immune support as well as stress reduction and better sleep, all the things that people are being challenged with at the moment. And unfortunately, there's such a wide array of things on the marketplace right now that are just totally you know, anywhere from just useless to dangerous, that you really want to have the right information before you go ahead and use some of those products, because there's a lot going on. It's more like the Wild West, as they say. And yet, there are some really, really excellent products. So that's what you want to use to get the correct results, and things that are pure and tested and from reputable places. So that's what I would suggest. I have a lot of private consultations about that as well, and help people go through the process of either getting a license, a state license, so they can buy legal THC component marijuana products in their home state through whatever licensing and approval process there is, and then you go to a dispensary, or buying online, like right now today, really good quality tested and efficient oil, which would be a CBD kind of oil, which does not have the THC. So with that, we are going to bring in on our guest for today. I know he's been successful at joining us, which is wonderful. And today, our guest is Dr. Joel Kahn. Dr. Kahn is an MD, and he's from Detroit, Michigan. He's a very well-known cardiologist and clinical professor of medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine. He's called America's Healthy Heart Doc. And he has a triple board certification in internal medicine, cardiovascular medicine, and interventional cardiology. Dr. Kahn is also the author of many books, including Your Whole Heart Solution, Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses, and The Plant-Based Solution. He also has another book coming out called Lipoprotein, The Heart's Silent Killer. Dr. Oz has appeared on many media outlets, including The Doctor Show, Dr. Oz, and Larry King Live. And he owns a company called Green Space, which is a healthy restaurant in Detroit. And he also serves as a medical director on one of the largest plant support groups in the U.S., which is called PBNSG.org. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Kahn.
My pleasure. And it's wild times out there, but talking about health and natural health is always the right time.
Yes, I agree. And actually, so I have been doing since 1964, and actually ran a holistic clinic with Dr. Serafina Corsello in Manhattan. I don't know if you ever had the pleasure of meeting her, but I did that for 23 years in the 70s and 80s. And we did everything that was very similar to what you're doing in your practice now. And I think it's wonderful that you're doing media. People can find you at drjoelkahn.com. That's drjoelkahn.com. So Dr. Kahn, let's go back in time to why you became a doctor.
Yes, absolutely. And I just had to clear my throat. I got so emotional about how long you've been doing this. Congrats. Well, I became a doctor out of a lot of what I have become, and I'm proud of my focus on natural heart health. I'm classically trained at universities in every kind of medication, surgery, procedure, and such, and I performed thousands of catheterizations and stent procedures over 30 years. But it's the focus is now on preventing, reversing, healing, using science-based techniques. But when I was born, I had a heart murmur, a little noise the pediatrician heard, gave my mother, you know, a couple gray hairs. I ended up having a heart catheterization when I was 1 year old. I had a little hole in my heart, like a lot of kids. It did heal up, but I started going to the pediatric heart doctor every year at a large hospital in Detroit, and the bells and the whistles and the smells and the rest, it wasn't all that scary. I just got very interested. And you would have asked me by age 12, I grew up in a retail family where we didn't talk a lot about heart valves and health. But nonetheless, you would have asked me at age 12, I would have said heart doctor. So it was kind of like preordained. And then in Ann Arbor, right up the road from where I live in Detroit, they had a special program where out of high school, you could get right into medical school in an accelerated track. And I guess my essay was compelling enough that they accepted me. So before I knew it, I was 18 years old taking biochemistry and physics and anatomy and the whole thing. And it just gelled perfectly. I, to this day, wouldn't have changed anything. I wish I knew how to cure COVID-19 with, Brussels sprouts and garlic or something like that, but nobody does. But heart disease remains such a compelling focus. And I've been doing it, 30 years plus, and I will keep doing it because I love reaching out and working with people.
So, however, obviously, we're not claiming to have any, just do this and you'll be cured. However, protocols that I have developed and used for over 40 years have been explicitly helpful for people who have had colds and flus and other viral infections. And now I actually have two coronavirus cases who used the protocol and successfully got better. Now, of course, that's not a double-blind study. Many people get better. In fact, I think that should be a big part of the message, which is that most people who contract it get better. I actually think that should be the second number on all the news shows that are carrying on right now. The first number is how many new infections we know about, and that's mostly because of increased testing. And the next number is how many people died. But if you subtract those two numbers, that's a big number in terms of how many people got well. And I think we should be shouting that out a little bit more.
Well, where I go to look every morning, just in a morbid way, is Johns Hopkins University has a continually updated website. If anybody just searches Johns Hopkins University coronavirus, and they do report worldwide cases, worldwide deaths, country by country numbers, and they also do report resolved or survived. So it is out there if you look for it. And thank goodness the vast majority of people do survive. But what we're seeing in Detroit and Michigan, Michigan's number four in the United States for cases of COVID-19, and Detroit is really the hotbed of Michigan for this, sadly, is it's not just the elderly and those with multiple diseases, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. There are 30, 40-year-olds that are living healthy lifestyles that are getting this, and some are not making it. So, the frontline healthcare workers, the police officers, the firemen, the EMTs, they're really there, and they're at risk because protective gear has been deficient. It's catching up, but we all need to take this seriously. This isn't flu. This is far, far worse than flu. Although the numbers may not catch up yet to overall mortality on an annual basis, we've really only been dealing with this for 4 to 6 weeks. The next few weeks ahead are very scary. And, a high herbal intake, a high plant-based intake, maintaining your health is critical. I don't think it's enough. I don't even think it's enough to protect us from all heart disease cases because genetics, and we don't know why a healthy person gets this virus so severely and another person doesn't. Exactly. Whether it's the number of viruses you were exposed to or something about your immune system and how it is triggered and responds, this thing called a cytokine storm. But for the meantime, I would urge everybody, this is no joke, social distance, isolate, wash hands, antiseptic, boost your immune health, if that's a concept, with sleep and fitness and a positive music and stress management and optimal diet. And
you laid out a beautiful program there, Dr. Khan, which, now is actually a really good time for people to hear this, because we're not saying, okay, and if you do this, it's a cure for this illness, but it is something that will put your entire body, your entire mind, and your immune system into a better position to basically, whatever comes its way, right. It can't make you worse, it can only make you better, because you also discussed things like compassion and stress reduction, mind kind of techniques. And on your website, it's just a beautiful website, I invite all our listeners to visit it, at drjoelkhan.com. And I also see one that says khanlongevitycenter.com. Right.
That's my clinic where I'm right now helping patients by telephone and Skype and virtual calls, right?
Yeah, isn't that kind of good that we're going to have that system much more in place in the future should we need it?
I've been doing that for about 5 years quietly, and it's very effective in some specialties. Actually, like dermatology, send a picture. I mean, there's something different, and I'm not a dermatologist, but they've been doing that. There's a few times you have to have an exam. I can't take a blood pressure by phone, but my patients all have a blood pressure cuff. And I can't put a stethoscope on the chest by phone, but there are actually some robotic ways that can be done, used more in kind of telemedicine health clinics. So yes, it's a great convenience that will probably impact medicine long-term and will impact workplaces long-term. Not everybody needs to fly to California to give a one-hour lecture when everybody now loves Zoom and Skype and Hangouts, and they're very effective.
Yeah, I think that's one of the positive things that are going to go on. Even the late night show hosts and even the newscasters, they're all doing it just right from their living rooms. It's kind of fun to me to watch all these people who you've been seeing for years all dressed up and all made up, really seeing who they are. We see their individual living rooms. What kind of books does Al Roker have? You know, it's just...
Yeah, it's interesting. We had one of our prominent newscasters test positive for COVID, so that whole channel has to now project from home while they quarantine for 14 days. And, humans are resilient. As long as we don't get sick, we will survive and overcome. But this is a challenge. And,
it is.
Heart disease should be put on the back burner a bit. The front burner right now is virus risk and measures. But it's right behind the pot that's brewing with coronavirus should be the pot that always brews with considering your heart health, because unfortunately one of the highest risk groups for contacting and doing poorly with COVID-19 are people with high blood pressure, previous heart attack, congestive heart failure, multiple medications. Everybody should focus on not getting heart disease if you have it, optimally treating it, and focusing on the reversal of heart disease, which is a scientifically proven concept. I don't know if this shelter-in-place quarantine is ultimately going to lead people to realize they can cook at home, and they can hopefully cook healthier at home and not depend on carryouts, takeouts, restaurants, fast food. There might actually be a health benefit for those that get through all this. I hope people aren't slamming down, bags of Pringles and Oreos and frozen meals that are suboptimal. So I know my own diet has actually had an upgrade since all that. I'm making a gigantic, colorful salad every day that fills a whole bowl. And sometimes I do that for breakfast. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, for me personally, for me, not for my children, there's massive changes, but for me personally, there's been really about zero impaction because I always eat healthy. I never leave the door when I used to travel around a lot more, giving outside lectures. That has changed. But I never leave the house without bringing food. And because I've had such a busy life, I always prepare ahead. So I'll make steamed vegetables and, like you said, a salad. It's always going to be in a grab and go in my refrigerator at all times, because certainly when you are out on the road, hopefully when we all are allowed to go back on the road, there is no place, I have always found, and I mean for 40 years, there's no place to stop and grab something healthy. It's almost all junk food and garbage, and I'd rather not eat that. So a very good tip is just have your own homemade grab and go ready. And this might influence more people to do something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Your listeners probably don't know, I adopted a completely plant diet at age 18. I'm 61, so that's a whole lot of years. It's not a world record, but I made a change in undergraduate at the University of Michigan. So for a lot of years, the ability to be on the road and go to a scientific meeting, food was tough. And my mainstay was going to Wendy's and getting a plain baked potato, or sometimes with the broccoli on top, but not the cheese sauce, thank you. And I happened to be talking yesterday to a pretty well-known Australian, Andrew Taylor, who eats nothing but potatoes and dropped like 150 pounds and wrote a book about it all. And I was telling him, you know, your staple is what let me survive on the road. And not much has changed since then, you know, to really find a truly healthy, naturally low-fat, whole plant meal. A baked potato still saves the day, although there are plenty of other options that are popping up. But they're not always healthy, even if they're plant-based.
This is true. I never heard that potato one before.
Yeah, there's a couple people. There actually is enough nutrition. I'm not on the potato board of the United States or anything. But there is enough nutrients, fiber, protein, and vitamins that one could eat only potatoes and thrive. And there are a few famous people who've done it. This Andrew Taylor in Australia, called Spudfit, did nothing but all kinds of potatoes, baked or boiled, for 365 days. And he was medically supervised. His lab work was great. He's only 35 years old or so, but he lost, you know, an enormous amount of weight, which he's maintained off. And he wrote a book about it. And I contributed a couple recipes to his book. And then the very famous comedian, Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller, he's got a phenomenal book called Presto. And I'd encourage anybody struggling with weight to grab a paperback called Presto by Penn Jillette. And he had a horrible diet and horrible high blood pressure and multiple trips to the emergency room on multiple medicines. And he was coached by a friend of mine. For the first couple of weeks, you need to break all those habits, sugar, salt, junk food habits. Eat nothing but, and he left a blank for him. You could eat nothing but corn. You could eat nothing but apples. You could eat nothing but potatoes. He chose potatoes, and it's kind of been called the potato diet, which isn't fair because it's actually then reintroduces spinach and blueberries and spices. But Penn Jillette has done exceedingly well and has popularized this notion that the lowly white potato, sweet potato, purple potato are not to be ignored. And really right now, you know, hopefully our food chain will remain, you know, very accessible to getting produce and such in the next months. But
yeah,
having a big bag of potatoes in the basement in a cool spot, you know, like the old days in your cellar, might not be a bad backup, because you could, you know, bake potatoes and make it through a tough time, which I hope none of us will see.
Well, that's probably really excellent information, especially for a time like now. Well, we're going to take just a little break here, and I want our listeners to know that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is Dr. Joel Kahn, MD. You can find him at drjoelkahn.com. He has a phenomenal amount of great information there, and he's the author of lots of books. And we'll be talking to him about heart health, which is certainly his specialty, when we come back in a few minutes. Stay tuned for more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky, aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners,
and thank you so much. Coming back with us right now, Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can find us at naturalnurse.com. And we also have a protocol, which is an antiviral protocol, that you can request via email. Once you send an email, I will send you a disclaimer saying that all the information on that sheet, you know, you're deciding to use on your own. We're not recommending it. And then if you send that disclaimer back, you know, we'll send you the protocol. And many people have used it for, you know, about 50 years now. And we're certainly not making any claims specifically for this virus or any other virus, because it's illegal to say that natural remedies can be useful. However, our guest today, Dr. Joel Kahn, and you could find him at drjoelkahn.com, has been recommending lifestyle and natural therapeutics for his many cardiac patients, as well as so many others through his books, about avoiding the risk and reversing the risk. That's very interesting, Dr. Joel, that you're actually saying in terms of cardiovascular disease, people can actually reverse their risk.
Well, you know, just as you introduced, you can't overstate, overclaim, and make supports that have no scientific basis. But the joy is that in my field of cardiovascular medicine, heart disease blockage, and all the rest, the greatest database that plant-based diets and lifestyle, you always want to do some walking or more fitness, you want to avoid smoking, you want to get good sleep, you want to have social support and love in your life, but that this actually can reverse already present heart disease is not a theory. It's proven science. And that is exciting. I mean, we have data in other areas like rheumatoid arthritis. We have areas in certain cancers. We can't make claims that are too, you know, overblown. But in heart disease, we've known since studies done in the 1950s in Los Angeles, and then the famous Mr. Nathan Pritikin, and then the famous Dr. Dean Ornish, and the famous Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, and enough people with enough data. What your listeners may not know is literally yesterday in the leading medical journal of the, perhaps we can say the world, certainly the United States, called the New England Journal of Medicine, was a study that was published called the ischemia, I-S-C-H-E-M-I-A, which is a medical word most people don't know. Ischemia means inadequate blood flow, and if your heart has clogged arteries, you may have inadequate blood flow or ischemia. But very briefly, more than 5,000 people with very advanced blockage and very bad stress tests, and usually angina, chest pressure, or angina, you can say it either way. These people were, by a flip of a coin in a research study, the most expensive cardiology research study ever done through the National Institutes of Health. They either got stents and bypass right away, or they got medication, because there's still a room for medication. They got a diet that was suggested to be healthy and very low in fat, suggested, and some fitness recommendations. And at the end of 4 years, there's no advantage in these people. And these were not subtle heart patients. These were real, hardcore heart patients. Now, they weren't stuck in an emergency room or stuck in a coronary care unit. Those people need urgent care. These people were just enough over the line that they could go home and make this decision. There was no advantage. So even I can go back and tell you about people in the 40s and the 50s, but yesterday it was shown that the probably majority of stents and bypass operations could be managed with a healthy lifestyle. And what if we actually taught these 5,000 people, you know, a more scientifically proven diet, like the Ornish reversal diet, they do even better. But it's remarkable how the body can heal itself when you make small changes, and how it really heals itself when you make someone more dramatic changes. It's very hopeful. So even though I've been called a holistic doctor or this or that, this is the best medicine, the most recent medicine, headlines. Anybody wants to know about it, you look up ischemia, I-S-C-H-E-M-I-A study, and you can read all about it in the news yesterday, because it's seriously important stuff.
It's saying that the more aggressive interventions were no better than...
They were no better. Interestingly, in the first year, there was more risk of death and complication if you, by coin flip, were assigned to the early catheterization, stent, and bypass, because these procedures have risks, and some people actually don't survive the procedure itself. So at the end of the first year, the people that were eating better, taking medication, and having fitness actually were doing better. At the end of 4 years, it was a tie. There was no advantage. Death rates were identical. And a lot of people decide to have stents and bypass, anticipating their risk of death is lower. So, and these aren't, again, just the mild cases. These are pretty darn hardcore heart patients. The message for your audience, you know, don't not see doctors. Don't not get your heart checked. In fact, I'm an advocate of very aggressive screening, so you know if your arteries are getting clogged, you know, a decade before you might need bypass or stents, so you can really apply lifestyle. But if you're stuck in a corner and they're talking stents and bypass, read this study, read my book, The Plant-Based Solution, read Dr. Ornish's book, Undo It, change your diet, change your fitness, change your stress, change your social connections, and it's powerful. The same stuff you've been teaching since the 60s is the headlines of this week in the world of cardiology.
You know, in that, doctor, also, of course, I am a PhD RN, and I do believe in conventional medicine as well. And I really, that's why I love the term integrative, because it's good medicine. Like, what you're doing is good medicine, science-based research medicine. And one of the things I love in Western medicine are the high level of pre-screenings we can do. Like, I know you talk about using a sonogram to measure how much plaque might be on the arteries. What a fantastic thing, because unlike a stent, there's really, I believe, just about no known risk to doing sonogram studies, and yet you get this huge amount of information. So the risk-benefit ratio is so supportive of really having that done on every patient.
Well, you know, it's a very odd finding and a very important one for your listeners to consider, that when you're about 45 or 50, your internist, your primary care doc will say, probably, you should schedule a colonoscopy. Hey, doctor, I don't have any problems. Look, we screen for cancer. You should schedule a mammogram or a thermogram. Hey, I don't have any lumps. We should screen. The biggest elephant in the room, the risk that we all have of dying of a heart attack from clogged arteries we don't know we have, is not brought up because there's an assumption you can't identify aging arteries until the time you start to have symptoms or in an emergency room. And that is false, false, false. You can do an ultrasound on the neck, a carotid ultrasound. You can do the plain vanilla kind that screenings at churches and hospitals do. Or you can do a fancy one like I do called a CIMT, carotid ultrasound. There's also a CT scan of the chest that takes about 5 seconds. Hold your breath, go home. No needle, no injection. Less radiation than a mammogram. It's called a calcium CT scan of the heart. And for about $75 or $99, you get the truth serum. Are your heart arteries aging or not? So the question for people, and what I do in my clinic all the time, I help them find out if they are on their path to the most serious threat to their health, cardiovascular disease and death from stroke and heart attack and aneurysm. We design a little testing, and it's the imaging and a little blood work. Talk about blood work 1 second. And then we lay out a plan. Hey, you're about 10 years away from a stent or a bypass, but you're never going to have it because we jumped in early. And these are the changes to make in your diet, your fitness, your vitamin levels and everything, your stress levels. And I'll just say one thing about lab work, because it does intersect with the new book that I have that got published 2 weeks ago. There is a form of cholesterol in the blood that is not going to show up on your doctor's cholesterol panel. You get a total cholesterol, an HDL cholesterol, an LDL cholesterol, your triglycerides, and those are important. Get them checked. There's both lifestyle reasons and medication reasons and genetic reasons. Yours might be suboptimal. But there's a kind of cholesterol called lipoprotein little a, and that's a mouthful, L-I-P-O protein. And then you got to put a little lowercase a. So it's called lipoprotein little a. Very confusing terminology. We should just rename it. It is also called the sticky cholesterol. And one out of every four people inherit this cholesterol in an elevated manner from their parents, but they don't know it because it's not in the medical model in the United States to spend $30 and check it in the lab. Every lab runs it, every lab in the United States. But it, you know, one in four people is about 80 million people in the United States and 1.8 billion people around the world. And if you inherit it from like age one on, this is in your blood, it can start to clog up your arteries, clog up your heart valves, put you at risk for stroke, dementia, the whole gamut. And you might want to know that early in life so you eat better and stress better and sleep better and have more fitness and make sure the other numbers, blood pressure, blood sugar, standard blood cholesterol. So my book, Lipoprotein Little A, The Heart's Quiet Killer, is fortunately number one on the booksellers in heart disease in the last 2 weeks. Very simple book, but there wasn't a book in the world anybody could read about this, so it's the first book on the topic. And there's a lot of hopeful approaches, which are mainly food and lifestyle. So very, very hopeful and frankly, very simple ways to approach it.
Now, how does that differ, Dr. Khan, from the ApoA to ApoB ratio? That sounds
That's
similar.
A great question, you smart lady. So ApoA is a fancy way to basically measure your HDL cholesterol level, your high-density lipoprotein. We sometimes call it the happy or the good cholesterol. ApoB is a way to measure LDL cholesterol, or the lousy one. We call it the risky one. And those are more advanced ways from a study called the Interheart study to assess your risk based on the standard cholesterol panel, total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and triglyceride. But that does not measure. That's the confusion. There is something called ApoA with a capital A.
Yes.
But this is written as lipoprotein little a. It's sometimes also called LPA, but you got to put the A in lowercase. Okay. Again, somebody needs to rename it, but that's how it was named in 1963, and that's what we got. So nonetheless, it's important to do what you just mentioned, but I urge everybody, based on my review of all the scientific data and speaking to other authorities in the field. You know, the European cardiology community now says everybody should get this checked once in your life. Get it checked when you're 20. Find out. But particularly if there are strokes, heart attacks, heart valve replacements, and bypasses in your family, that might just be the reason and you didn't know it. And, you know, learn more about it. Lipoprotein A, The Heart's Quiet Killer, is a very simple book. It's also packed with amazing plant recipes, because that is one path to deal with the problem. It can lower the level of lipoprotein A.
So I also want to ask you, I'm so happy that I have you on the phone, because very few people can give me an answer to these questions. So when we're talking about this factor that you're discussing, lipoprotein A, and then we were talking about particle size, is my understanding correct that in terms of the ApoA versus ApoB, ApoB is a smaller particle and is more sticky, as you referenced with the lipoprotein A?
Yes, ApoB, or LDL cholesterol, can particularly be converted or modified. It's called oxidized. Everybody knows you put a piece of metal outside, it might get rusted. That's oxidation. Well, oddly, that can actually happen to our cholesterol particles. And if you eat poorly, if you're deficient in omega-3, if you're exposed to a lot of pollution, you may convert your ApoB, your LDL cholesterol, to what's called oxidized LDL, and that's really a bad actor. That could just go right across the lining of your arteries under the artery and start to incite plaque. But yeah, we have receptors that can take up the cholesterol, so the more LDL particles in the blood, the more that are going to be around those receptors and take up the LDL into the tissues. And if you have this oxidized LDL, you don't even need a receptor. It just transmits right in. And this lipoprotein little a has even another way it attaches. It can get in through those mechanisms. But if your arteries have a little bit of irritation, which is actually pretty common, maybe a bad meal, maybe a spike in blood pressure, this lipoprotein A wants to lock on, and sort of like a band-aid, it attaches to injured areas of the artery. But then the cholesterol's there, and it gets under the artery as quick as can be. So it does put us at risk.
Well, that is fantastic information, and new to me, by the way, which is great. So I'm definitely going to get a copy of your book, Lipoprotein A. But I certainly do find it particularly confusing, seeing as how you just described, which was my understanding, the difference between ApoA and ApoB, with ApoB being that small sticky particle. And now you're sharing that this is yet another factor called lipoprotein little a.
Exactly.
That is really confusing. So these are separate things. Now, did you say anything about lipoprotein little b?
There is not a little b.
Okay.
There is not a little b.
Okay.
It's enough that we have capital A, capital B, and lowercase a, and I don't believe there'll be any more coming down the road. It's like hepatitis. We had A, we had, you know, B, now we got C, and it keeps growing. I don't think we're going to keep growing. Although, honestly, there might be unknown cholesterol particles in the blood that we haven't yet identified, and we will discover them, and maybe we will have to name them differently, right?
But yet there are tests now available for all these different factions.
Yeah,
and they can help someone know where they're at in terms of their cardiovascular risk. And then using a program like you outline to your patients, and also at drjoelkahn.com. Now, with the new world of telemedicine, Dr. Kahn, are you able to interact with people all over the country, or do they have to come to your facility?
No, I always, you know, I'm a hands-on doc, and I love my stethoscope, and there's nothing quite like looking people in the eye. But with all the technology that's out there, and of course, we're all hearing about it, though I was actually doing it for quite a long while, telemedicine works excellent for preventive cardiology assessment, for preventive cardiology care, I do indeed enjoy all of it. You can do it very effectively by phone, Zoom, Skype, and the rest.
So if you wanted to recommend some of these more advanced tests, and actually they should be standard of practice tests. Like what we've been doing for years, even in the clinic that I worked in, is if someone had an elevated LDL, we then went ahead and recommended that they went back for what I was talking about, which is the ApoA to ApoB ratio. I don't think we ever recommended a lipoprotein small a, but you're saying all those things can actually be recommended. But
every lab, like Quest Lab, LabCorp, mm-hmm. hospital labs do it. Let's take a break.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
The Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM.
Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to PRN.FM, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Stay up to date with PRN for the latest on COVID-19, the coronavirus, on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
And welcome back once again right here to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com. Click on calendar if you'd like to see all the classes and workshops and CE unit certified classes that we give for nurses, nurse practitioners, chiropractors, registered dietitians, massage therapists, and also anyone can take the classes. You just don't have to get the CE credits, but you can get the information so you know how to use natural remedies for yourself and your loved ones. And today we're so happy to have as our guest, eminent cardiologist, Dr. Joel Kahn. And you can find him easily at his website at drjoelkahn.com. And thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Kahn.
Well, I really am excited to get a return appearance with you. It's a wonderful network.
And, you know, great information. Yes, confusing even to me, but, you know, this is why I do this, because there's no end of learning. And, well, for years we have been testing for the ApoA to ApoB ratio. Now I learned about the lipoprotein small a. Now, doctor, in terms of that lipoprotein small a, are you saying that's a genetic marker, or can that be changed through diet and lifestyle?
Well, Excellent question and a very important question. It is genetic. There are probably more than one gene for sure that dictate from your parents on conception whether you're going to inherit this or not. It's an unusual particle because there's a variety of sizes of lipoprotein little a, and we don't fully understand from a clinical perspective what all that means. But, and it's this massive, you know, every molecule of lipoprotein little a has an LDL inside of it and another piece called apo little a. And so you look at this thing, it looks like a spaceship from, you know, from the outer banks of the galaxy, very nasty looking little particle. It is genetic. Now, we do know that the common approaches like Mediterranean diet does little to affect it. Statins do not lower it, like Lipitor and Crestor. Hormone replacement therapy has been suggested to lower it a bit. There is data in 2018 that whole food plant diets can lower it perhaps 20%, which is a nice movement. The big one that moves it down can be niacin, vitamin B3. Used over the counter or prescription, a little bit out of favor in most cardiology practices, but long been used to lower standard cholesterol LDL, as well as now we know it lowers lipoprotein little a, so some practitioners do use it. About 4 years from now, there may be a prescription drug, an antibody, which will knock the socks out of levels of lipoprotein little a, but it has many years of studies and safety data and a high expense anticipated before it gets released. So yeah, we're challenged by it. The real mantra is find out if you have it. If the risk is high, get the rest of your lifestyle in line. Don't be lazy about your diet, your fitness, your sleep, your stress. You know, fix what we know how to fix. And everybody can eat a bit healthier today, without a doubt.
And that's why you provide so many different recipes. And we've had many doctors on here, such as Neil Barnard and other members of the organization he's involved with as well. And tell us a little bit about your organization, PBNSG.org.
Yeah, so kind of you. That stands for Plant-Based Nutrition Support Group.org. It was a phone call 6 years ago from a person in Detroit I didn't know who said I was supposed to have bypass. I learned of something called the Esselstyn diet at the Cleveland Clinic. I snuck out from having bypass one day before the surgery was scheduled, came back to Detroit. I've eaten perfect for the past 9 months, and I have transformed my life. My cardiologists in Cleveland can't believe how much better I am, but I'm lonely. I have no other buddy and no support to eat this way, family, friends, coworkers. Can we make a support group? So PBNSG was the idea for maybe 20 people to get together and talk about recipes and where we shop and how we eat plant-based, no added oil, as is the style of Dr. Ornish and the Pritikin Center and such. Turns out that group has exploded to 7,000 plus members, and we have large meetings. Now we have large online meetings. I think Dr. Neil Barnard will be lecturing online in the next few weeks and such. And it's really transformed so many lives. People have lost a dozen pounds or 50 pounds or 100 pounds or gotten off one medicine or three medicines or avoided certain procedures under medical observation by simply changing their diet and having friends who've done the same and new friends, now digital friends because of social distancing.
Boy, oh boy. So that is just an absolutely wonderful story. And of course, moving in the right direction, just stop eating junk would be a really good first step.
Step one is junk, and step two would probably be lower your animal food intake as low as you can and find healthy substitutes. A bean chili, not a beef chili.
Well, simple. just one other thing. I just published an article this month about how I actually do not think those, I don't know, they're called Imagine Burgers or something like that, which they're selling now at the Burger Kings. If you read the ingredients on there, it does not look like a health food to me. It's loaded with all kinds of things like genetically modified soy, genetically modified corn, lots of tapioca starch. I don't see where it's a big improvement.
I agree. It's good for the environment, and it's good for the animals, and it's possibly neutral for humans, but is a clear-cut advantage. It probably has less hormones, antibiotics, and pesticides than a beef burger. So it is not a health breakthrough, but it's still a bit of an advance.
Okay, well, I'm happy for your opinion. I actually don't like the way they're hyping it, because when we talk about a plant-based diet, I think you and I probably think of a beautiful salad or a big plate of steamed, even organic vegetables. You know, that is a plant-based diet rather than a sort of a mixed together, gooey, starchy thing that looks like meat and also with a molecule in it that has the taste of blood. I mean, that just does not sound like a plant-based thing to me.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same page about that and so many things, and it's been a pleasure to meet you. And I am actually doing a presentation on cardiac health coming up, and I'm going to add in your book and this whole concept, which is new to me, so I'm sure it was new to many of our listeners. And thank you for writing a book about it, about lipoprotein little a.
Not you got it. You nailed it. You did perfect.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Joel Kahn. And you can find Dr. Kahn, listeners, on his website at drjoelkahn.com. You know this show will be archived, so if you think one of your friends and families should listen to it, we'll have it up shortly on our archive. And thank you so much for joining us today. And on behalf of... Excuse me?
I said, have a healthy day.
Oh, thank you so much. And all of you listeners, I'm wishing you the same. And until next time, on behalf of myself, Ellen Kamai at naturalnurse.com, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we hope that you stay healthy.